The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Boker Tov. I suppose I have to check if you've done the sports question or not, Cathy.
Yes, I have done the sports question. I'm a little better at that than Howard, but there's actually a lot that he's better at than I am.
Okay, as long as it's done, then we can get chatting about things in Israel.
100%.
Peace and quiet with a good conscience.
All right. So, Anthony, can we first please deal with this whole thing with Saeb Erekat? You know, the Palestinian chief negotiator, reports from the hospital last night saying that he had passed away, reports from his son saying he hasn't passed away. What is the story? Is there any confirmation?
Well, no confirmation at all. And I'm not sure that the reports actually came from the hospital that he had passed away. I know that there were reports on certain news channels suggesting that he passed away, but quite a controversial story all in all, because as we know, Saeb Erekat has been the Palestinian chief negotiator for a number of years, has had a lot of choice things to say about Israel, a lot of criticism, lots and lots of negative comments coming from him over the years about Israel and Israel's behavior. And has been, you know, someone who's been highly critical in general of Israel. He himself has suffered from a lung transplant. So he had suffered from some bad health. I believe that the treatment that he'd received on the lung, was actually done in the United States. And to cut a lengthy story short, fell ill with COVID-19. A little while ago, and was controversially transferred to an Israeli hospital the day before yesterday. It was interesting the way that it was reported or not reported, as the case may be, because there was clearly some controversy around him being treated in an Israeli hospital. From a policy point of view, from a Palestinian policy point of view, it didn't look particularly good given the history that he's had with Israel. Apparently, the transfer to the Israeli hospital, Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem, was done at the request of his family. And Saeb Erekat clearly was not doing well at all, suffering from corona. Some even described it as a bit of an embarrassment for the Palestinian Authority that he has had to be hospitalized in a Jerusalem hospital. There were some reports that he'd been sent to Tel Aviv to somehow try to calm the embarrassment down a little bit, to try to reduce the level of embarrassment. But clearly he's been hospitalized at Hadassah and Kerem Hospital in Jerusalem, where he will get absolutely the best treatment, no matter what the history he has with Israel is. No matter what it is, the doctors and nurses there will treat him like any other COVID-19 patient. He clearly is suffering very, very severe reactions from the COVID with the lung disease that he suffered previously. And so the latest that I know, as far as I'm aware, is that his condition continues to be stable but serious in Hadassah Hospital, and that the reports of his demise yesterday might have been a little too soon. And even though Israel and Saeb Erekat have not necessarily been friends over the years, and we've certainly had our altercations with him, and he's had a lot of things to say which were really unjustified and were very negative for Israel, none of us wish him any bad, and it is our hope that the medical team in Jerusalem will help him to recover, and that he will get back to his normal everyday living in a healthy way.
Thank you, Anthony. I just want to clarify something, that the only site actually reporting that he had died is Sada al-Balad, and that's the English version. And this is an Arab newspaper, and I see that they've now changed their headline to Palestine's veteran negotiator Saeb Erekat on ventilator. So they were earlier reporting that he had died. It was the only website, and they actually said that the hospital had made an announcement. Okay, so moving on, Anthony Reich, let's see what else we need to talk about. Benjamin Netanyahu, why is his popularity dropping?
Well, for the same reasons that it has been before, it just continues to go down and down. Again, over the weekend, we saw massive demonstrations, now legal, as opposed to the slimmed down demonstrations that people were forced to undertake during the lockdown. Those restrictions on the demonstrations have not been renewed, and people were out in full force outside the Prime Minister's residence in Balfour Street in Jerusalem once again, demanding that he resigns from the government, criticizing his corruption trial, criticizing the way that he's been dealing with corona. There continues to be a feeling that the corona management has been more about his personal standing and about doing things which are good for him rather than doing things which are good for Israel. There seems to be a very widespread view that that's the case. And the latest opinion polls show that if there was an election today, the Likud would only garner 27 seats in the Knesset, and that Yamina party of Naftali Bennett would be very, very close behind with 24 seats. Now that's, compares with the current 36 seats that the Likud have, and that with the current 6 seats that Yamina have there, that's the Naftali Bennett party. So a dramatic turnaround, at least if we believe these opinion polls, and it seems as if though, that trend is continuing. In other words, that's not a stationary situation, and every day that goes by seems to bring less public support for Netanyahu, more for Naftali Bennett. Blue and white party apparently would fall to just 8 seats if there was an election today, as opposed to the 33 that they managed to get in the previous election. So they are also effectively being wiped out if we believe these opinion polls. But of course, between an opinion poll and an election are massive differences. So you know, I don't know that we can necessarily believe exactly the numbers that are being published out there, but the truth of the matter is that there is a very, very serious situation with regard to the current government's popularity. And the fact is that people are getting more and more fed up with the situation and blaming the government. And we're seeing that in spades with people turning out in these demonstrations, not only exclusively now on a Saturday evening, which has been the tradition for the last few months, but also sometimes during the week as well, people out demonstrating, trying to maintain social distance, but nonetheless expressing their frustration. So as the situation currently is, you know, even though fortunately our corona numbers have turned the corner a little bit now over the last week or so, and we're seeing a significant reduction in the number of new infections, the number of people who are ill with corona, people who are in serious condition hospitalized, there is a certain reduction, and therefore there is an opening up a little of the economy and of the education system. But I think that the events of the past few months are going to be very, very difficult to reverse for the current government. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the time that the budget needs to be approved, because there was a view that the government would try, that Netanyahu would try effectively to bring the government down over the budget issue and force another election. Now, if we look at the opinion polls, he clearly has no interest to do that.
So interesting. I mean, there's been recent situations where I'm kind of looking at leadership, and I'm trying to look at leadership from inside. And, you know, I think often leaders don't change because they become out of touch with what's really happening. And it's very hard to be in touch with what's happening if you are surrounded by yes people. You create this echo chamber, and there's a complete different reality to what's happening on the ground. And that's what it sounds like is happening in Israel.
Well, that's certainly the accusation that is being leveled against the Prime Minister and members of his family, and indeed many members of the government, that they're simply out of touch with what's going on the street, particularly now when so many people are suffering from economic hardships brought upon them as a result of the corona issue, and not only as a result of the corona issue, but also as a result of the way in which the government has managed the corona issue. We can't simply take corona and say, well, everything is down to corona.
Sure.
It's largely about how the government has chosen to manage it, where the emphasis has been, where most of the effort has gone into to make sure. And obviously one has to make most effort to preserve public health. That goes without saying. But where is the focus on the economy and how's that being managed. And I think at the moment, Israel really scores very, very badly on an international scale when one looks at the way in which the economy has been handled.
And yet, Israel's pension has been ranked the third best in the world. So tell us about that.
Yeah, the pension system. That was a real surprise for me to read that, that the Mercer CFA Institute Global Pension Index has rated Israel's pension system as 74.7 out of 100, which gives it a B grade, and it places it third out of 39 countries that were surveyed. And just to give people an idea of who the top of the list are, apparently the best pension systems in the world are in the Netherlands and in Denmark. Those are the two countries that were placed above Israel in terms of pensions. For example, when looking at the US and the UK, they were both graded C+. And apparently most countries saw their ratings drop this year. This is the first time actually that the Israeli system has been ranked. It's quite interesting that there was a comment made that because Israel has a very, very strong universal state pension combined with private pensions, which are compulsory for both employer and employee. This is really what has contributed towards putting Israel's pension system at the top end of the index in the way that it has appeared this year. And the recommendation always is to try somehow to increase the assets which are being held in private pension arrangements in order to reduce the reliance on any public state pension system. The more people are relying on state pensions, the worse it is effectively in terms of the rankings. At least that's how it turns out. So because Israel has a very, very strong private sector participation in the pension system, it's given it a very, very good ranking. But not only that where the public system has to actually come to help people who don't have a private system, that it's not a terrible public system. Having said that, there is constantly in the press criticism of the Israeli government over the way, particularly in which Holocaust survivors get treated, the way in which their economic well-being is not taken care of sufficiently, how many of them are still being forced to live in poverty, struggling to get through the month because the state is not adequately looking after their needs. So one has to, you know, look at the overall system in context rather than just read this in isolation.
Fascinating. Anthony, in 30 seconds, do you think that, maybe we should hold this over for tomorrow? Let's talk about Sudan tomorrow.
Well, we can just do a teaser. Yeah, just a teaser about Sudan. I mean, we've seen the U.S. government administration reducing the restrictions on Sudan and removing it from the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Do we think that that's going to lead to a peace agreement with Israel? Are the two issues linked at all? That's the teaser for tomorrow. Let's talk about it tomorrow.
Let's do that. Anthony Reich, I wish you a wonderful day, and we'll catch up with what's happening in the Holy Land and with you tomorrow morning. God bless. Bye-bye. That's Anthony Reich. You can catch up with him, see what else he has to say. Go and check out his blog. It's called Comments from the Edge. With that, it is 8 o'clock, and here is your news.